The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. And now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we're tackling deadly C. difficile colitis, why you should not overuse oral antibiotics, with guest expert gastroenterologist Dr. Jürgen Nord of the USF College of Medicine here in Tampa, Florida. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country, with over 1,000 women during each of our last two events and a combined 7,500 hours of education, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of direct with the expert health education. And as I mentioned, today we're talking with guest expert Dr. Jürgen Nord, who is professor of medicine in the Division of Digestive Diseases and Nutrition at the University of South Florida College of Medicine. Jürgen, it's good to have you here.
Thank you, Stephen. It's nice to be with you again.
And Dr. Nord, a native of Germany, received his medical degree magna cum laude from the Goethe University of Frankfurt, Germany. In 1965, he was awarded a Fulbright scholarship and completed his residency in internal medicine at Indiana University Medical Center in Indianapolis and his fellowship in gastroenterology at the Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri. In 1973, he moved to the University of South Florida College of Medicine here in Tampa, where he is professor of medicine in the Division of the Digestive Diseases and Nutrition, which he directed from 1990 to 2000. Dr. Nord is a past president of the American Society for Gastrointestinal Endoscopy, Florida Gastroenterologic Society, and the Florida Society for Gastrointestinal Endoscopy. He serves on the editorial boards of several scientific journals. Dr. Nord has a special interest in postgraduate education and has directed or co-directed 61 postgraduate courses. He has lectured at more than 640 local, regional, national, and international courses and scientific symposia. He has co-edited 3 books and manuals, and more than 170 publications are to his credit. Dr. Nord has been honored in the Best Doctors in America since 1996, and in 1998 he received the Laureate Award of the Florida Chapter of the American College of Physicians. The American College of Gastroenterology awarded him mastership in 2005. And again, as you have indicated, we've had the pleasure and honor of having you as a guest expert here on several occasions, covering a wide variety of topics in gastrointestinal diseases. And for that, we are all very thankful.
It's a pleasure to be back again.
Okay, and again, once I want to remind everybody how to contact us today with questions or comments on this topic. Our phone number here is 289-1860. That's 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Everywhere else, it is 877. This is toll-free now, 877-969-8600. And again, you can stream the show on our website, focusonfemales.com. Okay, so C. difficile colitis, deadly C. difficile colitis. First off, let's define the problem. What is C. difficile? What is colitis?
C. difficile colitis, Stephen, is the cause or is caused by the bacterium C. difficile, and it is presently really the most common hospital-acquired infection. And with the recent explosion in numbers, it has been very appropriately, I believe, coined the plague of the 21st century.
That's quite impressive. And before the show began, you also mentioned that in addition to it being widely prevalent and ubiquitous in hospitals, but we're also finding it out in the community.
Yes. Now you can acquire it even without antibiotics. And while antibiotics are the most common cause, now it can be acquired without being in the hospital and without having been on antibiotics.
And what's the big concern? Why is this such an alarming problem to have C. difficile, theoretically, in many places that we all go to and travel to?
Well, it causes a severe form of colitis, and it, so to speak, poisons the lining of the colon. If I step back for a minute, the colon, or what we call the lower intestine, is basically designed to recycle fluid and electrolytes. And when the lining is damaged, it is unable to do that. In addition, the lineage becomes very leaky, and then significant diarrhea occurs. There are significant ulcers throughout the colon, which are covered with exudate, which we call pseudomembranes, which is very characteristic if you would do an endoscopy. So it basically deals with a severely damaged colon.
And we also talked about some of the characteristics of this bacteria, that is its toxins. So is this a problem, or is this an immune problem where the patient or the host, the individual's immune system is creating the problem, or does this bug have very dangerous toxins that it secretes itself?
Yeah, I mean, anybody can get it, but if you ask about specific risk groups, it's certainly patients who have been on antibiotics, it's individuals who have been in hospitals or who are institutionalized, let's say, in senior assisted care facilities, for instance. It's individuals who have their immune system suppressed, for instance, to chemotherapy, they have cancer, they may be HIV positive. And another group is patients who have inflammatory bowel disease, and we actually had a program on those individuals who can then get a superinfection with a severe form of colitis. The bacterium is kind of interesting. It is actually part of our normal flora. It was not discovered until the 1930s, and the association with antibiotics was made in 1976. The problem is that through antibiotics, we alter the bacterial flora, and then C. difficile becomes the dominant organism, and that's where the problems start.
So the other bacteria kind of keep it in check. They have this agreement that they all can live happily with each other, but if it gets out of balance, that's when C. difficile becomes the dangerous bug that it could be.
That is very true. We just start to understand the bacterial flora, which in many ways is very beneficial to us, except if the bugs get to the wrong place at the wrong time. But that equilibrium, which is finally balanced, is upset with a dominance of the C. difficile, because many of the others are, so to speak, killed by antibiotics, and then patients become very ill.
Let's take another step back. Why are bugs important for the gastrointestinal lining?
Well, the intestinal lining is nourished by blood supply from the vascular system, and it is also now nourished from the lumen. And bacteria, for instance, can convert byproducts and end products of digestion, like carbohydrates, into nutrients, short-chain fatty acids, which are very important. They synthesize certain vitamins, vitamin B12 and so forth. So they're extremely important. If you just look at numbers for every cell in our body, we probably have at least, 10 or more. So we have billions of bacteria just in our colon alone, more than we have cells in our entire body.
And are the bacteria found throughout the intestine, small intestine as well as large?
Actually, there is a significant drop-off in the small intestine. The upper small intestine is pretty much sterile, and the acid in our stomach is in part responsible for that. But there is a valve between the small intestine and the large intestine, and there is a significant jump in bacterial count if we get to the colon or lower intestine.
So that's interesting. So right where the appendix is where the bacteria start to increase in numbers?
Yes, it's in that region called the cecum or the right colon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the bacteria are very important for providing, breaking down our food, providing nutrients for us. Besides bacteria, should there be any other microorganisms in there? I imagine there should not be parasites, there should not be yeast.
Certainly should not be, but we can occasionally find some yeast, and so therefore yeast in and by itself in a healthy person is not abnormal.
I see.
So we don't worry about that.
Okay. All right, so coming back to C. difficile, what does the C stand for?
The C stands for Clostridium, and like I said, it is a bacterium, which is kind of unique because it has a vegetative form. That's the one that grows and develops into the full bacillus and does all its damage in the colon. And then it has a spore form, and the spore you might look at as a dormant form that can live outside the body for extended periods of time, and then if ingested can develop into the bacterium. The problem with the spore is that unlike the bacterium, it is very resistant to therapy. So antibiotics, for instance, will not work for it. It will not be destroyed by heat or by acid or by alcohol. I'm sure everybody who is listening right now is familiar with many of the hand wash solutions. Many of those are at multiple sites in the hospital. And while they're good for many other things, they are not good for the spores of C. difficile.
So they will not kill those spores?
Absolutely not. And therefore, personal hygiene and the good old soap and water is still the best way to protect yourself and your loved ones if you visit them.
Will soap and water kill it?
It will wash it off and it will get rid of it.
Okay. All right. Now, how about the actual bacillus, the actual bacteria, the active bacteria? Will that be killed by the
alcohol? That will be... I think it would be, but that would be unusual to have that there. Most of the time, where we now have more or less significant contaminations of our healthcare facilities, it's the spores that are the problem.
Is it known what activates the spores to come out of cyst form or spore form?
I do not know. Bacteriologists might, but I'm not familiar with that aspect.
Okay. All right. And we mentioned before the patient groups at high risk. Is there any recommendations for these patients that are at high risk to developing this problem other than, again, aggressive washing of the hands?
Yeah, it's really impeccable personal hygiene to wash your hands frequently and thoroughly, meaning for at least 2 minutes under washing water, and then try to keep cross-contamination as low as possible. Meaning, if we have a patient who is identified as either a actively infected person or a carrier for that matter, then these patients are isolated for any contact, and that creates a significant healthcare burden to provide isolation for these many patients.
And especially of a carrier, because as you mentioned, it's a normal part of the normal individual's flora.
Yes, there are some individuals who excrete, toxins, but don't necessarily get sick from it. They have no symptoms, and they would be classified as carriers. But they can transmit the disease to a susceptible individual. And if you look at hospitals, it's interesting. They have looked at individuals who were admitted to the hospital and had a very low rate of positivity for C. diff. When they left the hospital, that rate may be as high as 50%, meaning a significant number got infected.
And what do you advise these patients, these people, when they return home? Let's say they have a large family. Other than, again, frequent hand washing, is there, what else can you say?
That's really the basic part, because it is contamination from your hands to your mouth or the fecal-oral route, basically. And so that's important.
To wash your hands and also keep your hands away from your face.
Yes, yes. As we now know, for instance, when we talked about the flu, you know, you don't cough into your hand, you cough into your elbow, so
that's
you don't touch that into your face and mouth.
Excellent. Okay, we'll be back with more. This is Steve Maskin. We are on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic discussing C. difficile colitis and why not to take too many antibiotics unless it's absolutely necessary with Dr. Jürgen Nord. Our phone number is 289-1860, 289-1860, outside of Hillsborough County, 877-969-8600. Call now with your questions. Be right back.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with a doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today, our topic is the deadly C. difficile colitis, why you should not overuse oral antibiotics. And our guest expert is gastroenterologist Dr. Jürgen Nord of the USF College of Medicine. And in the initial segment, we discussed what the C. difficile is, a bacteria, which also has a spore phase, which is very difficult to eradicate. And we also discussed how it's really ubiquitous in hospitals, and also we're finding out in the community as well. We discussed what patient groups are at high risk. And you also, Jürgen, we also discussed on break how between 2003 to 2006 there was a significant rise in the incidence of C. difficile. And what do you attribute that to?
Yeah, there were several epidemics that were reported, and since that time it has really spread. And the initial reports came from Canada. The implication from epidemiological studies were that it was probably related to possibly two factors. One, the overutilization of quinolones like Cipro, ciprofloxacin, and the other probably the extremely widespread use of oftentimes not indicated proton pump inhibitors or acid blocking medications, which remove the acid from the stomach, which, amongst others, not only activates digestive enzymes, but also assists us in keeping the upper intestinal tract sterile. Now, those are epidemiological studies. It does not always imply a cause-effect relationship.
Mm-hmm. And what, since 06, is it, maybe it's too early to see if there's been any ongoing or additional
Yeah, it has then moved, to other hospitals as well. The other thing that is now clear, that a mutation occurred, that the bacterium changed,
okay,
and it became a much more aggressive, more virulent form of the bacillus, and it created a toxin which is much more powerful and much more larger, so to speak, which has a much more serious effect on the lining of the colon.
Okay. Do you want to make a comment on the toxins? I guess that's used to test for C. difficile, the so-called exotoxin A and B?
That is correct. There are two, as you correctly state, A and B, and there are now some tests available to us, amongst other tests that we have, which very quickly allow us to identify toxin A and B. B is actually the one that we focus on because that is the one that is clinically important, and it allows us really within 24 hours to make that diagnosis, and that is critical so that we can take the appropriate steps in our patients. I should say that a single test in and by itself being negative is not sufficient to let us rest at ease. We usually look for at least three negative tests if we have patients who would be suspected of having C. difficile colitis.
And is there need to be an interval, required interval between those negative tests?
No, it's just, from three successive stools. We
okay.
do it from three successive stool sets. So it's a assay which is done on the stool, and it looks for that toxin.
All right. And you mentioned a mutation in a toxin. Is it the exotoxin B, which has become even more virulent?
Yeah, it's actually a new toxin, but that is true. And
it's a third toxin now.
Yeah, okay. It's a toxin in the bacterium, and that produces a different and more powerful toxin.
And these toxins, I understand, actually create the ulceration in the gut?
That is correct. It's not the bacterium in itself, but it produces a stuff, if you wish, which then poisons the lining of the colon. They are what we call tight junctions. They are loosened up, and so the colon not only ceases to function in appropriate absorption, but it secretes liquids as well. And as you can imagine, patients have 15, 20 bowel movements per day. These patients can get very sick, severely dehydrated. They can become hypotensive, becoming shocky. So it's very serious.
15. Mm-hmm.
But I should also mm-hmm. say that the spectrum is somewhat wide. In patients who are healthy, most of those patients get over it. It's really that subgroup that we initially discussed that do not do well, and some of those patients then need to come to our intensive care units. And in those situations, sometimes to save the patient's life, we have to remove the colon, and mortality is up to 16% of those patients who go to the ICU.
Okay, and we'll get into more of that. You said most patients do well. That's assuming they get the therapy required.
Yes. The most important thing, actually, is if the patients are still on an antibiotic, you suspected to stop it if at all possible under all costs. That would be the number one thing. And then, of course, supportive care, and then we can talk about specific measures that you might take.
Let's come back a little bit, talk about the clinical manifestations. Obviously, it's frequent bowel movements, frequent
yes.
episodes of diarrhea. You mentioned
yes.
15 or more a day is not uncommon with this
yes.
disease.
That is true. Many patients have, as a result, abdominal cramping. They might have some bloating. They might be distended. Fever is not uncommon, and we usually look for the white count. The normal white count is maybe between, 3.5, 5 plus. But here, when it is 15,000, 20,000, then we become very concerned. Furthermore, we take an X-ray, and many times the colon becomes so poisoned, if you wish, that it distends and becomes bloated. We call it toxic dilation, and those are very ominous signs.
Now, there is another condition known as simple antibiotic-associated diarrhea, which is which needs to be differentiated from this disease, correct?
Yes, obviously there are many causes of diarrhea, especially in the hospital, and so antibiotics without C. diff can cause diarrhea. And so again, we would have to run a test and look for the C. diff toxin to exclude that, because patients can get diarrhea as a result of antibiotics just because of the alteration of the intestinal flora. And furthermore, as we discussed before we came on the show, there's even a third variable to that. If you have had C. difficile or another bacterial colitis, that can set you up to IBS, C. irritable bowel syndrome, and many of those can be associated with diarrhea. So the patient might have, after a C. diff colitis, antibiotic or a correction colitis induced diarrhea. And again, that has to be differentiated. So matters become quite complex.
So once you have the C. diff colitis, you can still have diarrhea, perhaps on a resurgent C. difficile, but also you can have diarrhea from an irritable bowel syndrome problem.
That can, yeah. So, we now have recognized that intestinal infections are a not uncommon cause of irritable bowel syndrome.
So what this means is that, of course, the patient that's been through this needs to have a close working relationship with their physician.
Correct.
And
correct.
To report any symptoms, any recurrent symptoms, loose bowels and so loose diarrhea and so forth.
Yes, because recurrence of C. difficile infection and colitis is not uncommon. It's as high as maybe 25%, and then after that it might go as high as 50%. So you get over the initial episode and then you get sick again.
And I want to come back to that, but for now, and with the antibiotic-associated diarrhea, a person takes antibiotics and they have diarrhea, but it is not a C. difficile-related colitis diarrhea. Do these can the symptoms be similar? Meaning, can they have 15 bowel movements a day and cramping, bloating, fever, and those other symptoms?
It could be. It usually is usually not set that severe. I mean, the diarrhea is a dominant feature. The frequency, it probably wouldn't go to these high numbers, and signs of what we call toxicity would usually not be present. It's usually a milder form.
So the problem is, in those cases where you may have a C. difficile associated diarrhea that does not have the severe cramping, severe bloating, but still the C. difficile, to not confuse, not assume that, okay, this is just an antibiotic-associated diarrhea and potentially not C. difficile because it's not so severe in your symptoms. It could still be the C. difficile.
Yeah, it could be, and many times we do further testing. For instance, an endoscopy can be extremely helpful because the C. difficile colitis has very characteristic appearances at colonoscopy or sigmoidoscopy.
And you mentioned the asymptomatic carrier state where there's spores still in the intestine, and there's a 25% recurrence rate on these patients that have...
Mm-hmm. Even patients who have had it, and the recurrence rate is many times due to reinfection, or it could be just that the dormant spores then develop and develop into the vegetative form of the bacillus. And so that is not uncommon. I think I like to stress it. It doesn't mean that the antibiotics didn't work, or as we now many times suspect, that the bacteria may be resistant to the organism. That's not the case.
Okay. Now, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about various treatment options for this condition, the C. difficile. We're going to come back in a moment. This is Dr. Steve Maskin, Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. C. difficile colitis. Be right back.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average has been flirting with 11,000 for the first time in 19 months.
After briefly crossing the 11,000 threshold.
But Wall Street swooned when the U.S. trade deficit hit almost $40 billion.
What we need are goods-producing jobs, and we're not doing it because of the government stimulus.
And a failed bank says it was federal regulators that caused it to go under.
Well, we are told by the president, by Tim Geithner, by Bonnie Frank, we need these rules.
Now, more than ever, keeping your head above water. Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. Think of everything that's happening right now, from the effort to repeal Obamacare, the Tea Party movement, and the all-important elections in November. I keep up on all this and more at HotAir.com. Every day, HotAir.com shines a light on everything from the Democrats' plans to raise our taxes to choosing a new Supreme Court justice. And HotAir.com is free. Log on to HotAir.com and read what you've been missing. HotAir.com. From Obamacare to the November elections to choosing a new Supreme Court justice, keep up with it all by logging on to HotAir.com. That's HotAir.com.
The Tampa Bay Rays are back on the field, and as they kick off a brand new season, you can show your support at the St. Petersburg Area Chamber of Commerce Rays Luncheon, Wednesday, April 28th at the USF St. Pete campus. Get the opportunity to meet players, coaches, and management, and hear the latest on the 2010 season. Individual reservations are just $39, and corporate table sponsorships are available. For reservations and details, go to stpete.com. That's stpete.com.
Congresswoman Mary Bono Mack.
When you hear politicians talk about this problem, it's obvious that so many of these people have no clue or understanding about how serious this problem is. And our country is still not willing to admit that there's an epidemic problem of these pills. Why do I care about what's happening in Broward County? The pain clinics in Broward County feed the whole eastern seaboard.
The Prescription Addiction Radio Show, Sunday nights at 9 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back. We're talking about C. difficile colitis or C. difficile associated diarrhea. And with a guest expert, Dr. Jürgen Nord of the USF College of Medicine here in Tampa, Florida. And let's talk a little bit about treatment now. Certainly if someone has diarrhea in the setting of recent antibiotic use, how soon should that patient or individual contact their doctor?
I think as soon as possible, because the C. difficile colitis can occur while the patient is on antibiotics. It can occur 5 to 10 days after they have been stopped, and they have been reported as late as 10 weeks after cessation of antibiotics.
So they're certainly within 24 hours they should call. And is that correct? Is that fair
yes.
to say? And contact their doctor's office and tell them that they're experiencing this diarrhea after having been using antibiotics, no matter what the antibiotic.
That is correct. If you ask, which are the most common ones, mm-hmm. that would be clindamycin, Cipro, and Levaquin, which are in the class of the quinolones. And then, of course, big offenders are the semisynthetic penicillins like amoxicillin and ampicillin, cephalosporins. But in general, it can be any antibiotic.
Okay. And is it known what the minimal exposure is, can you get a C. difficile associated diarrhea with 1 day of antibiotic therapy?
I don't know that. I think it would be significantly less likely. Mm-hmm. I think the big problem when patients come to the hospital very sick, when the problem has not been recognized, they have the colitis and the antibiotics are continued.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the only reason I bring up the question is because sometimes, for example, with some antibiotics like azithromycin, it's a one-time dosage, a one injection.
Right.
And I don't know if there's any reported cases in that setting. But I guess the underlying message is if you've got diarrhea after a recent use of antibiotic, any antibiotic, no matter if it's oral or IM, intramuscular, or IV, of course, then the doctor needs to know about it.
Yeah. Notify your physician and let him or her decide, you know, what the best course of action is from there on.
And the nice thing is, again, if when thinking about C. difficile colitis, you can have a test done looking for that toxin and the results back that very same day.
Absolutely.
All right. So as far as the treatment, what is the conventional first-line therapy for this disease?
Well, if it's related to antibiotics, if the patient is on antibiotics, if at all possible, we would suggest that the antibiotics be stopped. If the patient must be on an antibiotic for whatever serious illness is present, then one might look at an alternative antibiotic, those that are maybe somewhat less commonly associated with this problem. And those would be the immunoglycosides, it would be sulfa drugs, vancomycin or tetracycline, something like that. So okay. That would be the first one. The second point would be generalized supportive care, because many times in the milder forms, patients do quite well and don't need anything else but just stopping the antibiotics. Mm-hmm. Adequate amounts of fluid, hydration with sports drinks, for instance.
How about probiotics?
Very good question. How about if we just restore the quote-unquote normal bacterial flora again? And there are, of course, multiple advertisements about various forms of probiotics. The true scientific evidence is not terribly strong, but they have been found in some observational studies to be helpful. The problem with the probiotics is that we really don't have any true standardization. As you know, they're not subject to FDA regulation, and sometimes they don't have exactly in there what the package says, and they have not been studied in an adequate way. But they probably don't hurt, and many times they're used as an adjunct, but it's not the primary treatment.
Do you think, as a general statement, do you think that because they couldn't hurt, if you were put on antibiotics, would you recommend going on a probiotics just as a matter of course?
Well, I mean, you could do that. But if you think, you know, we have truly billions of those bacteria in there, we really knocked it out of whack with our antibiotics. And we take a few capsules of whatever it is, lactobacillus or some other, drugs, and then assume in our naive way that we're going to put everything back to the normal version state, I think that's probably not likely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so going back to the treatment options, stop the antibiotics or convert it to sulfa antibiotic or tetracycline, doxycycline. You mentioned the aminoglycosides, which would be the tobramycins, the gentamicins.
Correct.
Supportive care. And let's move on to the antibiotics which are used for this disease.
Yeah, most patients that we see in the hospital certainly would require antibiotics, and there are usually two antibiotics that are considered. One is flagyl or metronidazole, and the other one is vancomycin. The point is that these antibiotics have to be taken by mouth. Many times we think an IV form is more effective, but here it must be taken and should be taken by mouth. And we in general prefer as the initial treatment the flagyl for the simple reason that it is a much more cost-affordable drug as compared to vancomycin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so if the patient has side effects from the flagyl, which I understand can happen.
They can happen. So we need to counsel our patients. Sometimes and patients kind of dislike this drug because it gives you kind of a metallic taste. It cannot be taken with alcohol, and even if you don't drink alcohol, some medications, cough syrups and so forth, can contain it. So it's important to know that. And with longer use, there can be a peripheral neuropathy, meaning some numbness and tingling. So it would be very important to advise your physician should that occur.
Mm-hmm. And anything else besides the antibiotics, such as Questran?
Yes. What is Questran? Questran is anion exchange resin, a substance that binds good and bad stuff, if you wish. and it has the ability to bind the toxin. Again, it's not a first-line drug, but it can be very helpful. It doesn't taste very good, and I always tell my patients, you know, a medication that doesn't taste good usually is a good medication. So it's a powder dissolved in water. What you need to remember, as I said, it binds good and bad stuff. It should not be taken together with the antibiotics. It should be taken offset by about 2 hours, and it's usually given twice a day.
Okay. All right. Twice a day. Good. And again, just to remind everybody there listening to today's show, now is an opportunity to call in with your questions. Here in Hillsborough County, our number is 289-1860. That's 289-1860. Everywhere else outside of Hillsborough County is toll-free, 877-969-8600. And let's go back to talking about recurrence. So let's say we have a patient who was with known C. difficile associated diarrhea, was treated with the flagyl and seemed to respond, but maybe a month later comes back with recurrent toxin-positive proven C. difficile disease.
That's a common scenario, Stephen, and as a rule of thumb, it's about 1 in 4 patients. So it's very, very common. And many times you think, well, you know, the flagyl worked, but then it lost its efficacy. That's not the case. Resistance is extremely rare, and that's really the good news in all of this. And therefore, what we would do is treat the patient again for another 2-week course. It's probably a reinfection due to the spores which have regerminated.
Okay, so it's very rare to have resistance. So we go ahead and go back on the same flagyl, assuming there's been no side effects.
That is correct.
Okay, for another 2 weeks?
2 weeks. 2 weeks is the recommended duration of therapy initially and certainly for the first recurrence.
Okay.
Sometimes if you have more recurrences and they can occur, we might use antibiotics intermittently, or at that time we might consider to switch to vancomycin. Vancomycin is a substance which is really not absorbed to any significant degree and can be very effective. It's used for other drugs as well. I should mention that in patients who are too sick to take oral flagyl, the flagyl can be given IV, but the IV vancomycin, which is certainly an available formulation, is not effective and should never be used.
But the IV flagyl can be?
It can be. That is correct. So that's the difference between flagyl and vancomycin.
Okay.
Vancomycin, however, is an extremely expensive drug.
All right. And I think we have a caller on the line from Brandon. Brian, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Okay. Brian, can you hear us?
Yes.
Hi. Welcome to today's show. Thanks for your participation.
Thank you very much.
What is your question or comment?
Okay. To Dr. Nord.
Mm-hmm.
My mom has been having diarrhea for almost 6 weeks. She was on Cipro twice. She had a UTI twice. She was in the hospital. She contracted the diarrhea probably a week after she started the Cipro. We have her now on a bland diet of rice, crackers, clear liquid, bananas, Jello. We were doing yogurt with her, but then the doctor said they wanted to be on this bland diet. When she was in the hospital, they said she had diverticulosis, but she has never had a problem with it since. And I'm wondering, is there anything else we can do? She was checked for C. diff, negative on that. She's had 2 CNSs, and everything comes back negative. They just did another one again. Is there anything we can do to help control this? What happens is at night she'll get cramps. She'll run to the restroom. For the first week, she had explosive diarrhea for a week, and then it mellowed out, but she has severe cramps, and then she has to use a restroom. And she's it's uncontrollable. She never knows what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for your question, Brian. It's certainly reassuring that your physicians have excluded C. difficile. I would like to make sure that she has had at least 3 tests to be absolutely sure. because that is important. An initial negative test would not necessarily exclude it. There are obviously, you know, many other causes. Diverticulosis in and by itself would not be a cause of diarrhea, and neither would be diverticulitis. But there is microscopic colitis, collagenous colitis. So I don't know if she's had a sigmoidoscopy or colonoscopy.
She just had a colonoscopy a week ago, and it came back negative.
Yeah, biopsies, of course, would have to be taken, even if the lining looked normal. So it would be critical to have biopsies taken at that time. At the same time, we usually look into the terminal ileum. And if everything is negative, it might be a post-antibiotic diarrhea, which can linger on for an extended period of time. And certainly, you know, some probiotics in the form of yogurts or various commercially available preparations could be considered. Questran that we discussed with Dr. Maskin might be another possibility. So those would be the things that I would consider. And, of course, anti-diarrheal agents just as a symptomatic treatment, Lomotil, Imodium AD, these kind of things might be helpful.
Yeah, we're doing the Imodium AP liquid, which seems to be, work a little bit better than the pills.
Yes, especially at night to make sure that there are no problems and no accidents at night.
Okay, well, I heard you talk about the Equestin, so that's something we could try.
That's Questran.
Questran.
Equestran. How do you say it again?
Q-U-E-S-T-R-A-N.
Oh, Questran. Something like that.
Yeah, your doctor would know what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Q begins with a Q.
Q. Okay.
Now, Brian, I've got a question for you. Has your mom had prior to this using the Cipro for her UTIs? Has she had previous bouts or problems with diarrhea?
Never.
Mm-hmm. And how old?
Well, now she's 90. She's 90.
Yes.
But she's been healthy. She had open heart when she was 80. She did very well with that. She's a walkie-talkie. Alert and oriented times three is just, this thing is just,
It's debilitating, isn't it?
I'm sorry, sir?
It said it is debilitating.
Yes, it is, and it's taken her fight away. She just, she is just miserable.
In addition, I would recheck the C. diff maybe one more time to be just absolutely sure.
Okay.
Is her diarrhea, is it watery or loose? Do you know?
Well, now it's starting to get foreign, but it's been watery for like 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So it sounds like the bowel, Jurgen, sounds like the bowel just sometimes takes a while to reassert itself.
Yeah, especially in a patient of that age, it takes for quite some time to recover from this. Mm-hmm. And she might have had some initial antibiotic-associated diarrhea, and the lining has been damaged, and it just takes a longer period of time to ultimately recover.
Right.
Has anyone ever noticed any blood in the stool or the diarrhea?
Negative. Everything comes back negative. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Okay. All right. Well.
Well, listen. I appreciate your show. I just have to turn it on. First, I thought you guys were selling vitamins.
We are not selling anything.
Getting ready to turn it off, but then I heard a professor from years before. I go, all right.
No, every Sunday we're here and we tackle, you know, real medical problems with real physicians and answering questions from yourself and everyone else that really needs some direction, some help, and some guidance.
Yeah.
We don't practice medicine, obviously, but we, you know, we're there to help help guide people.
Well, like I said, I'm in the business. But we're all the doctors and everybody, we just didn't know what's going on. So I heard your show and I go, hey, this sounds pretty good. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. And good luck on your show. Doc, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. And, for those that are listening out there, again, we do have time for another call. So, please pick up the phone now. It's 289-1860. In Hillsborough County, 289-1860. Everywhere else outside of Hillsborough County, it's toll-free, 877-969-8600. Okay, so we talked a little about the recurrent case. Your patient with toxin positivity for C. difficile, treated with flagyl, goes away, comes back to initiate another round of flagyl. However, at some point in time, vancomycin can be considered to turn to. Not the IV vancomycin, but the oral vancomycin.
That is correct. We would use that. If it continues on, we sometimes have patients intermittently on vancomycin with a slow taper, and then when symptoms come back, retreat the patient. Another antibiotic should be mentioned, rifampin, which is a antibiotic which is approved for traveler's diarrhea. I don't know if it's approved for C. difficile colitis as well, but that has been shown to be effective as well. So we have various other options in our armamentarium.
Does it make sense to isolate the C. difficile and run a culture and sensitivity against it?
You can culture it. It's called C. difficile because it was very difficult to culture and to isolate. So you can do that, but in general, we do not do any sensitivity testing. It's usually done empiric with the three or four antibiotics which are available to us. Mm-hmm. And they appear to be equally effective.
Okay. All right. And is there ever a cause or indication for using more than one, for example, the flagyl and the vancomycin, or for that matter, the rifampin, two of the three? Does that seem to give any better coverage on this bug?
No, there's no evidence that that is the case, and so for that reason, single antibiotics are used.
Okay. And how would you, so ultimately, when it comes down to the best treatment is avoidance, prevention, and what's the best way to prevent getting this disease?
Number one, I think you, the audience, are about as guilty as we as physicians, meaning antibiotics are used too liberally for diseases that would get better by themselves. Common colds, certainly viral disorders, do not respond to antibiotics. Even the sinusitis, you know, ultimately will get better. So therefore, my advice would be, number one, use antibiotics only if you absolutely need them, number one. Number two, significant personal hygiene, meaning washing hands at least for 2 minutes with soap and water, be especially vigilant if you are in healthcare institutions, if you are either a patient or if you visit, again, extreme personal hygiene would be important.
And keep your hands away from your face.
Yes.
And which can be difficult if you have kids, and kids can get this disease.
They certainly can. Children, it's interesting, actually. The rate of C. difficile, not necessarily colitis or illness, but just the bacterium present in newborns is very high. But as their immune system matures over the next 2 years, they develop very strong, really, antibodies and they get rid of it in general, don't get sick. But as they get older, children certainly can get sick, but it's really not the group that is at high risk. At high risk are the elderly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Very good. And any last messages, any other thoughts to leave with our listeners before we end the show today?
Just be vigilant, I think. Think about it. And as I mentioned, use personal hygiene. Try to avoid antibiotics if at all possible. And if symptoms occur, contact your physician as soon as possible to get professional guidance how you should either continue antibiotics, stop the antibiotics, be tested. I think those would be the messages I would like to leave you with.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I'd like to thank my good friend and esteemed colleague, Dr. Jürgen Nord, for joining me today on today's show. And for you listeners out there, I'd like to review upcoming shows. Next Sunday, we are tackling hair loss. Hair loss next Sunday, that's May the 2nd, followed by the subsequent Sunday, May the 9th, that'll be non-ophthalmic manifestations of Sjogren syndrome. Sjogren syndrome, of course, is well known to be associated with dry eye and potential blindness, but it also is a systemic disease, and there are significant non-ophthalmic manifestations that we will discuss and review. Following Sunday, we're going tackling grieving on May 16th. And then the following Sunday is benign prostatic hypertrophy. Okay, those are the next 4 Sundays. In the meantime, this is Steve Maskin wishing each and every one of you a healthy week. And we'll see you next Sunday on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Bye-bye.